Alrighty, guys. Good morning, and welcome back to the Chasing Freedom Show with Noah and Jeff. Today, I'm super pumped. It's our first in-person interview in a pretty long time, and I'm really, really excited about this guest. It's actually my half-brother, Michael Porsche. If you guys are watching the video, you can definitely see that we're related. So I'm really excited about this show. Guys, Mike does a lot of awesome stuff in this industry. His company that we're going to focus on talking about today is called
STR Legacies.
Boom.
Boom.
I'm really excited, guys. So Mike hangs out in our office quite a bit with us. I love having him around. He adds a ton of value, and he's helped us out a ton with our personal short-term rentals. But he does coaching, teaching other people how to learn about how to manage their short-term rentals, how to do it from afar, how to underwrite and evaluate the properties. And so, Mike, I think our listeners are going to gain a ton from you today, and I'm really excited for you to be able to share your knowledge with everybody.
Yeah, man, I'm really excited to actually get in this.
Yeah, man.
I'm talking about
this
financial freedom and chasing freedom. You know
yeah.
What I mean?
Yeah, so Michael is one of the most fascinating guys that we get the chance to do real estate because most people are like kind of nice. Michael's above nice. Like you never have this all like sometimes when I talk to people, I'm like, they just being nice because they have to be. Michael's like in your face. I'm going to hug you, may kiss you on the cheek on the way out. Just kidding. I won't do that to you. But he's a really genuine dude. So not only is he's an awesome, genuine, nice guy, but he is one of the most diligent and well thought through Airbnb managers that I've met. And we've met a ton of Airbnb managers, and Mike has systems and processes that go far beyond what I've seen in most people's businesses. So we're excited to pick your brain on that. But let's start with your why for real estate. Like, what got you into real estate? Why'd you pursue it? What were you doing before this? And what really got you motivated to make that jump?
Yeah, man. Just in a quick derail, just a little bit. I was voted most congenial in high school, and that was something that.
What does that mean?
So I was doing the same word.
Does that mean beautiful?
It just means the nice guy.
Oh, really?
Which, in my perspective, I was like, yeah, I'm really nice. But then I was like, I'm just that nice guy. Mm. Like, well, I guess there's other things that you could be, voted for that you.
I got class clown. Congenial is much better, bro. Much better.
Well, that's just like, we ran out of names, so here is most congenial for you. There you go. No, but that's a great place to start. So my why for real estate. So I grew up like many kids did, wanting to be a fireman. That was all I ever wanted to do.
Yeah.
And so at that point in time, that was my focus all throughout, man, middle school, high school. Like, that's what everyone knew me as, the person who was trying to achieve that. And and I did. I had the opportunity to get hired with the city of San Diego. Worked there for about 5 years. But before that time, I kind of had a pivot shift. And it went from me working or me like wanting to fulfill my dream as a firefighter and help people like have this idea, this image of myself of just being a bad arse. You know what I mean? Like just getting all for it. But it pivoted for me when I met God because I realized, man, that was something that was an idol in my life because I really wanted, I just loved that image, right? I love the image of being a hero who's capable, who's a badass, like want to do all these different things. But I noticed that's what I wanted more than anything else.
Yeah.
And then so when I met God, I was 19 years old, a whole bunch of crazy stuff happened. And I don't have time to go into that. But with that being said, it got me into a position where it now became a means to an end. And God still allowed that for me to pursue that goal. But now I saw it as more of a way to provide for my family and still have time off to pursue ministry and do other things. But when I got to that point and I got hired with the city of San Diego, it was great. Had an awesome, career there. And it was probably one of the most fun I've ever had,
Rad.
Working. And, but then I met my wife. And my wife was a lot more fun than hanging out with some old freaky dudes, So, but it got to a point, and, we had our daughter a couple years after, and we got married, and then, and I was a sole provider for my family, and so being that, living in San Diego, I had, no time to spend with my family. I was spending about two-thirds of my life away from them, so I was working maybe 10, well, not 10. The normal firefighter schedule is, from working 10 days out of the month. And we were working about 15 to 20 days sometimes because we had to, because we were being forced to work. But the reality was we actually, we needed that money in order to be able to provide for my family living in San Diego. And I was like just gone, you know. And then there were strike teams, and not even talking about, you know, fire season. I was gone for weeks. So when that happened, it was like, dude, I'm missing out on a lot of family time. And it was cool sometimes, like you get your family that can come over to the station, that kind of stuff, which is great. But it was just like, in order to keep up with the pace of the lifestyle that we wanted, I had to sacrifice so much of my time in a way.
Yeah.
So I was like, dude, there's got to be another way. And I was talking to an engineer of mine, and he handed me this little purple book. And a lot of you guys know just what the purple book is. It's Rich Dad Poor Dad. And so that just really gave me vision and casted vision to like what I can actually do. And I remember I was in Amsterdam. I was walking. I was taking like a month off during this time when I was doing that. But when I was reading through it, and dude, it just blew my mind. But it told me like all the stuff what you can do. It just didn't tell you anything on how to do it.
So get you the mindset.
Exactly. So that started my journey into real estate. Started in doing some wholesaling. Went into assisted living. Got over here to Idaho. We started living. I started, you know, going back and forth between San Diego and here. Started doing some real estate sales, and then, you know, eventually that brought me to what I now invest in, which is vacation rentals, and that's been, you know, going on for the last year now, and it's been pretty good.
Nice, man. That's rad.
I like that you gave yourself the opportunity to try the different avenues of real estate out and figure out where you found found the most success. I think a lot of times, like, you know, what we hear all the time is pick your niche and stick to it.
Yeah.
But you might start somewhere because of the path of least resistance, right? Like I started wholesaling the same reason, the path of least resistance. I didn't have to go get debt. I didn't have to do all these crazy things and take all this risk. Yeah. And that honestly isn't the best path for me, just like it wasn't the best path for you. But you gain your experience, and step by step, you move to bigger and better things until you find where you have your success that with the least resistance. And I feel like that's for you. When I've watched your journey, it seems like it's just been this natural flow and this very organic thing that grows for you with short-term rentals and vacation rentals.
Yeah, you know, I think it more so does just because it fits our lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, and like, because when we first started, we're like, dude, we got this amazing idea, assisted living. It's such a small niche. Like, no one, you know, really knows or does the things about it. But we got into it. We got two properties right off the bat, and we were, like, drowned in that work. And it was just not fun. It was kind of depressing, you know, like, I mean, for those who do it and who are good at it, like, God bless them. There's a lot of work that needs to be had, and people are dying left and right.
Yeah.
And it's just like, don't get attached to your, you know, your tenants.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you're combining like a real estate business with like hospice care. Like,
those are
two different beasts, man.
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, we actually had some good success with that, but we washed our hands of it ultimately because it wasn't something that we were psyched about.
Yeah.
You know, and so we had some success in real estate sales and wholesaling. And then it got us to a point where we took a vacation. We took some time away and we thought to ourselves, man, it would be so cool if we can just invest where like we love to vacation.
Yeah.
And that started the journey for us. Then we started renting out one of our studios in our own home. And that was like, that was it. Just seeing like money the road and like, hey, this actually works.
Yeah. I like that you found something that you enjoyed and then that's an avenue that you pursued. I find that a lot of people like get stuck in this whole like, well, everybody, when you do real estate, you got to be like a flipper or you got to be a commercial guy or you got to do this. And it could simply be like, I love vacation rentals. I'm going to jump into that. Because then how much easier is it to run a business that you're actually passionate about and that you love?
Yeah.
But it's so rare that you meet somebody who's like, I'm just doing short. So even the guys that I know that do short-term rentals, like they still flip, they still do multifamily, they still do a ton of stuff, which there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I love that you can be so hyper-focused on one thing. And I think it's one of the reasons that you're so successful so quickly in that niche, because you're so passionate about being in that niche.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely fun. And I think the reason why I'm so passionate about it, because it still means to an end, right?
Yeah.
It's still a means that serves my purposes with my family, with what we want to do for ministry, with what we want to like go travel and serve for. You know, for example, like our plan was this year to go to Greece and live there. And that's why I've been learning it.
Yeah.
But, you know, Corona has been changing a lot of things. So we kind of pivoted and now we're looking towards Nicaragua to stay for like a month.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me know when I need to buy my tickets.
I will. Just heads up. We'll come on down. But definitely a lot cheaper down there too. It's a lot less expensive, but, you know, and that's pretty cool too. Cause you could just rent out your own house, you know, while you're gone, which is what we're planning on doing.
Yeah.
And that pays
for your mortgage covered.
Yeah.
Bare minimum.
Exactly.
You know, so,
exactly. Well, and,
Let's get technical because I really want to. I really want to. You have so much knowledge inside your head. I want to pull that out and I want to give the listeners something tangible that if you're listening to this because you want to do a short-term rental, you're going to gain enough information from this episode to go do it. Let's or at least go take some action to get you started, right? So,
I love Mike, guys. Mike's a good dude.
So, Mike, I kind of want to hand the direction or I want to hand it over to you to take this where you want it to go. Should we start with maybe your first short-term rental deal, or should we start with your best short-term rental deal, or should we start with breaking it down to like the first three steps? You want to go get into a short-term rental. Here's the first five things I recommend you do.
I think maybe the first three steps, because that was the most like actionable and actually give you the way. Because everyone kind of starts off of like starting off with Airbnb, like locally or wherever they're at. Mm-hmm. And that necessarily isn't always the best option.
Yeah. Yep. I agree with that.
Cool. So yeah, what would be the first thing? Pretend I'm a brand new newbie and I come to you and I'm like, all right, Mike, you've convinced me. I want to go into short-term rentals. I like this idea, but I have no idea what to do.
Yeah. So that's kind of loaded. But I would first start like, you know, because you don't know what you don't know.
Yep.
But like, just from my perspective, the first thing that you're going to figure out is really what, like, look at yourself and what resources you have, you know, what your resourcefulness is and see what you can actually pull from yourself. So for us, first starting out, we had to go locally because we had a house that we just bought. We could house hack. And that was one of the easiest ways. We were thinking, wait, do we do long term or short term, you know, with this house hack? And we ended up going the short term route, which got us to believe in the ability of Airbnbs and short-term rentals.
Yeah.
But, and so like, I would first start there. What is the easiest like transaction that you can be able to make happen with your current resources?
Yeah.
So basically like, what's your competitive advantage?
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Which is, we've talked about that on the show so often, is that it's easy to trick yourself that you don't have the same, like maybe I don't have the same advantage that you have in a certain area.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I don't need to. Like everybody has some sort of advantage depending on where you are, what your skill set is, who you know. Mm-hmm. Find out one of those and get rolling with it.
Yep.
I think that's a great first step.
Because that is literally what's going to get you some traction to keep going.
Yeah.
But that's where, I guess, the first step from there. But like, from there, now, if you have resources, if you have, you know, money, or if you have the knowledge, you know, I would recommend getting knowledge, because that helps a lot.
Yeah.
You know, but like making sure when you're getting the knowledge, like don't go analysis paralysis, but take action.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, what I point to people first is like identify the market, you know, identify the market that's going to best serve your needs. So whatever your goals are, right, you can get very clear, very specific on what your goals are. What are you trying to achieve?
Yeah.
So I had like a good friend of mine come up to me and she's like, hey, I want to buy this, you know, house down the street. It's $450,000. And in our neighborhood, that was a really great deal, you know, but I'm like, okay, well, what are you trying to achieve? Like, I want to be able to spend more time with my family and, you know, not work as much. I'm like, all right, well, the cash flow from this house is going to make probably around like $38,000. And she's like, great. And I'm like, well, to be honest, I wouldn't necessarily do that if you're trying to achieve what you're trying to achieve. And so I pointed her in the direction of where, you know, that would make the most sense in terms of like, if you're trying to buy a home that's going to produce a certain amount of cash flow that will allow you that freedom, like, why don't you start looking out here, you know, because this market allows for it. And the specific market that I was referring to was Virginia. It was a little town, rural place in Virginia that, you know, doesn't have a whole lot of light shining on it at the time. And it's, you know, kudos to her. So just kind of refocusing on that second step, right? So after you determine your own resourcefulness, like, you know, we looked into a market that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, the three things I teach, you know, within my group and within my company is, you know, you look for the demand, you know, you look for where there's a continuous revenue growth because that's going to show longevity. And then you also look for, you know, what's the investability, meaning how much are you paying for the home and for the return that you're going to get?
Yeah.
So are you paying $200,000 to make 50, or are you paying $1 million to make 50?
Yeah.
So kind of like that, the cash on cash return, right? So
exactly.
It's a good
metric. People trick themselves into missing that on Airbnbs, because I think you're right. Most people assume that short-term rentals at Airbnbs are hyper-local. You do them in your local market or somewhere you have reach already, which doesn't, like, that's not necessarily true. Like, we have them here in Boise because they worked for us on a cash out refi and it made sense.
Yeah.
But if it didn't, like, I'm not buying a house in Boise to then put on, or Boise, excuse me, don't shoot me. Your Treasure Valley folks, I said it wrong, I slipped. But I'm not going to buy a house for $500,000-$600,000 here if my net cash flow is going to be $30,000 a year, where I can go and buy one in Florida for $152,000 and get that same net cash flow.
Yeah.
So then that's really important to point out.
Yeah, absolutely. And then just to finish that story, because I think it was really powerful, because now she like she's literally closing this week, that same person. And
really?
You know, she's projected to make $80,000 this year.
Really?
And what was the purchase price on that house?
Purchase price. So I originally thought it was $270,000, but it was listed for $270,000, but it was she bought it for $307,000.
And then she's gonna need to put some furniture in there.
Yep.
So
yep,
maybe yep. another $20,000 in furniture?
She paid $11,000 for furniture.
Okay. So she's I mean she's literally in this thing after closing costs and everything for probably less than $315,000, $320,000.
I mean, you know, because what's cool about real estate and investing in the United States is you're able to leverage loans, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
you can put roll a lot of those costs in there. But, you know, yeah, with the down payment that she had, I don't know the details, but I'm assuming it was around like maybe 20% or something like that.
Okay. So she's in this thing for less than, as far as the debt and her own equity goes, less than $320,000, which in the other market she was looking at, she was going to spend $450,000.
Yeah, it's $120,000 less.
And the return is what? Basically double?
It's almost, it's just like 2.5, 2.6 times.
Yeah. That's cool, man.
Yeah. That's insane. Incredible. What, and that's a net cash flow number?
No, what, that is, total, I mean, so that's
gross revenue.
Yeah, that was the gross revenue. Okay. So like net cash flow, like all said and done, or at least after all the expenses are paid, right? She's probably going to be taking home around like 40 or something in cash flow.
When you said 80 for three, I was like, shut up, stop everything, take my money, Mike. You can have $600,000, I'm done working for the rest of my life.
Yeah, man.
That is killer. Cool. All right. So we got step one is to determine your resources.
Yep.
Step two is to identify a market.
Yep.
What's step three?
Step three is really getting, because what makes this confidence? Because you can identify a market and you can still make poor buying decisions.
Mm.
So you need to get the data that is going to support those buying decisions. And you need to get as much as you can, because the more information you can get, like, the better. You just need to learn how to, like, put it all on a map and see, like, okay, well, what is my risk, right? Because the more information you know and you can put it into a certain fashion, you can then therefore, I would say, analyze and determine your risk from that purchase. So the data that we utilize, and we actually just created our own data as of, like, last week, which is pretty exciting.
Nice.
But and that's just from collaboration with other big companies and stuff like that. But some of the main, like, big data companies out there are, you know, there's something called Key Data, which they pull from or just from property managers from local places. So they actually get the actual numbers of what people are buying for on the back end system, which is pretty cool. So keydata.com or something like that. And there's MashVisor, which is another one. And we use MashVisor and AirDNA probably the most commonly.
Yeah.
And so what we do when we go into a market, and we identify a market, this market is good enough. It has the demand, it has the revenue growth, and it has good investability overall.
Okay.
Now we're going to look at specific properties, and we're going to start doing comps. Mm. So we're going to look at, for say, example, like this one property we just looked at in Gulf Breeze, which is in Florida. We looked at this one, and it was a 2-2.
Okay.
And we decided, hey, this might be a good property. And, you know, we got it under contract from a wholesaler for $160,000. And we're looking to do a little burr with it.
Yeah.
You know, ARV is around 240, but that ARV consists of a 3-2.
Gotcha.
So, like, all right, we see one of the rooms is big enough. We can chain that into a smaller, you know, another bedroom. Yeah. That would allow us to do a 3-2. That would be concise for that. But it's really important, because the comps we're now looking at is not, we're looking at the after repair value for the comps because we wanted to do a burr.
Yeah. Yep.
And for those who don't know who burr is, buy, rehab, refinance, repeat, rent. What's important for our exit strategy is we're looking to do a short-term rental. Mm. So with that, you know, we're looking at also the comps for short-term rental. So what we do is we look at AirDNA first.
Yeah.
We'll get AirDNA. We'll select that house. We'll look at other 3-2s in that neighborhood, right? And just like how you would for normal comps that you're looking for when you're buying and selling, you do the same thing with, you know, with Airbnb. You look at other 3-2s that have like things, like amenities. So you're looking at, like, does it have a pool or a spa? Mm. Is it on the water? Is it have bikes? So you're looking at these things because these are things that people care about.
Yeah.
That's what they want.
Yeah.
That's what they're willing to pay for short-term rentals. Yeah. So you have to only pick properties that look like, and as well as have the same amenities and sleeps the same amount of people.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we looked at it, and for 3-2 that sleeps 8, you know, we were projected to make about $50,000 from that one property.
Okay.
And so, but as soon as it went down to a two two, or, you know, went down to something with less amenities or a different side of the street, that income drops to like 30 something thousand.
And that's gross yearly revenue.
And that is exactly. So that's gross. So, and, you know, with that being said, you're looking at these properties and you're seeing where they're located, you're seeing how many it sleeps, you're seeing what the amenities are, and you have to actually identify the properties and see where they're located. And you also have to identify, too, because there's a lot more variables that are concerned. It's like, is it being managed
properly?
Yeah, properly, by a professional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it being managed on multiple platforms?
How many days is it available, right?
Exactly. Is it available?
You taught me that one, by the way. I'm not going to take credit for that. Mike taught me that.
Yeah. Is it available 100 days or available 300 days? Because that obviously changes, one, the professional use of it, and it changes how much you're able to make in that, you know, in that short amount of time. Yeah. But those are the comps you're looking at, you want to compare it to, which is, you know, but once you get that data, something I also like to look at, through MashVisors, I can look at each month and see how much that property or those properties are making each month. So I can see when the high season is and the low season is. And, you know, and you want, like, I like to go where there's some stability between the seasons. You know, there's not that much drastic area, like, vastly different.
We're feeling that right now.
I was
going to say, you mean like Boise, Idaho in January?
Yeah.
This is so horrible.
And so this is like the worst time for Boise because people, you know, it's just Boise has less reasons to visit besides just living. And I mean, there is like tons of family and there's always going to be a demand here. But it's just not as popping during wintertime. It's just what it is. But you can see that data, which is really cool. And so you can prepare for it. Like, okay, well, how much am I projected to make in these months? And how much am I projected to make in the hot months? And where do I really need to make sure my Airbnb is open and being rented out? Because that's where I'm going to make my money.
That's good. I think it's key because it allows you to make informative decisions that people would rush into. Like, I'll be 100% honest and, like, take extreme ownership. Getting into Airbnbs, I did not do all that research. I was like, oh, here's the nightly rate. Like, I looked at AirDNA. I was like, here's the nightly rate. Okay, cool. 60% occupancy. Cool. It works as a burr. Was that the best investment? Probably not. It's still a good investment. But I think it's so important because, fortunately for us, we're fix and flippers, so we're able to create high enough margins that really we're just land banking to get a future appreciation anyways is the ultimate play. So we're protected. But for somebody else,
if that's your one source of income,
and you approached it like Jeff did, you just shot yourself in the foot because you didn't do enough data analysis, right? So I think that's key. I think you pointed out a ton of resources for folks to be able to use. Like, I know you had told me about MashVisor, but I don't even have a login or nothing. But that's key information for people to have to use.
You just brought up something that I want to piggyback off of.
Yeah.
So this is not a hard pitch or anything like that. But Mike just gave our office manager full access to his course. And through doing that, she got access to like all the login stuff for all of that, like discount codes and all sorts of crap. So it's actually really cool because by her being a part of your program, now we have access to all that data. Because poor Mike, I used to hit him up like,
bro,
I used to hit Mike
Mike's
up.
Like, guys, could you stop calling
me? He's like, dude, just stop being so cheap and pay for the freaking course. I think you finally got tired of me reaching out. So you just gave me the course. But I was reaching out to Mike like on a bi freaking weekly basis. And I'm like, hey, Mike, could you come back to the office and show me this market in this particular neighborhood and tell me if this is a good investment?
Yeah.
So, I mean, your course includes like, I mean, could you break that down a little bit more? Because I don't want to.
The course is STR Legacies, right?
Yeah. It's more of like a group and a like what we're trying to create is a group of sophisticated investors.
Yeah.
I'm trying to coin this term, like, we're the STR practitioners. I'm not sure if that's really going to, like,
trademarked right
blow,
here.
I like
but
that.
Trademarked.
I'm trying.
Hey,
right?
How cool would it be if you could give people the right to put, like, you know how a doctor, you know, you get to put DR in front of your name.
Yeah, man.
You get to put some type of thing in front of your social media profiles that says you're, like, authenticated through Michael's program.
That's what I'm talking about.
I like it.
And that's kind of, like, the goal, right? Because I'm not, like, some expert. Like, I haven't been doing this for years. And one, nobody has been doing short-term rentals for years because it's so new. But, like, I've literally been in this for, like, less than a year. I've just been super hyper-obsessed with it, which allowed me to gain some traction and gain some properties and... You know, and it's been because it's worked for us. But through STR Legacies, I just thought to myself, what can I do to bring a band of people together and just give them so much value that would allow them to be successful in this and be really hard to fail? And so I started off with the course, and what we do is like a 6-week course, and that's pretty much goes and breaks down, like, first of all, like, why real estate? Then it goes into how to determine your market, how to determine which property to buy, how to. And then we go into asset and tax protection because a lot of people just don't know about, you know, how to protect yourself, you know. They think it's like, oh, I put it in an LLC and that's it. And like, no, there's a lot more that goes into it, you know? And so, then we go into, you know, just how to make your returns, how to, you know, identify a good property manager and how to utilize them and like, what's the right interview questions you want to ask them as well. And, but through that too is also we do coaching. So we do 8 weeks of coaching that we're kind of holding your hand and there's action steps after each lesson is done. So it's like, hey, if you're in this group, we want you to actually be successful and we want you to actually buy property. And so that's what kind of things that we always ask our people is, are you ready to take action, you know, within this group? And like, we even give, you know, some strategies of how to do with little or no money down for those that don't have cash. Cause I didn't have cash when I first started. So I had to utilize some of these strategies. But I literally hold people's hand, walk them through. On my coaching calls, we call realtors, we have lenders on the calls and, you know, discussing certain things. And, you know, we determine markets, we evaluate, you know, markets together and, you know, are really trying to help push them to the right direction. But through that, what's really cool is just the resources that we get. So, I mean, you know, discounted with MashVisor, we got AirDNA, you know, partnership. And then we also have, like we have a list of just the top, you know, 3,000 cities to invest in. And we have all these different metrics that we measure by, not just like the demand and the growth and like how much investability, but we developed a little software that allows us to even click on that market and you can see like, you know, what the seasonality is of that market. You can see what the, which is the highest growth and you can just click on it, gives onto like a little Zillow page and you can find properties that kind of meet your metrics in that same market. And so, you know, you can also filter it by state, which is really cool. That was somebody who actually was one of our first members. He's been helping me kind of develop this just so it makes it easier, right? So we can kind of figure out what market we want to, you know, work in. And and it's also, we just put in too, is like I've included my resources, so my lenders, my national lenders, contractors and stuff like that. So we're trying to make a little more of like a marketplace where you can find, you know, resources in that specific area of like recommended people.
That's incredible.
You kind of know what that market is, but we only have a couple.
That's huge, man. I mean, like that's a huge struggle. Like, I still struggle with that. Like every time we go into a new market and I'm interviewing lenders and trying to figure out who's going to work with us. And what you end up a lot with is a lot of people that overpromise and underdeliver.
Yeah.
And that's not how real estate transactions work. Like you can't have a lender saying, I'll do this in 30 days. And then they take 60.
Yeah.
And we've been through that. So
many times.
You know, but it's nice that when you have someone else that's actually vetted the lender and gone through it with them and can say, yeah, from experience, this person can do X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of stress off your back. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I mean, it's hard too, though, because, you know, each lender has their strength and their weakness.
Yeah, they do.
Like.
Yeah.
And like even the ones I still utilize today, like, to be honest, I still have some struggles with them.
Yeah.
In terms of like in certain, you know, certain aspects. But I think that's just when you're working with humans, you know, everyone's going to have, you know, their weaknesses.
Yep.
And so you just need to kind of, you need to have enough resourcefulness, enough resources to put in your plate to really leverage all the strengths of the resources rather than just relying on one person. So that's what I always say is, hey, build that list.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, before we run out of time, I wanted to pick your brain on one thing. What is your, what are your kind of pros and cons that you see in self-management versus hiring a professional manager? When do you recommend people bring in a professional manager, or do you think it's easier to just set up systems and get coaching to learn how to self-manage multiple properties?
Yeah, so it's really at, that question can change at scale. So like I would say it's easier and you make more money if you're just managing one property.
Yeah.
So if you have one property, it's easy. I think personally, like just throw it on Airbnb, you know, or Vrbo, just depends on what market you're in. And self-manage, you just hire a cleaner and there, you know, and there you go. It's one property. But if you're looking to get like two or three and you start to scale and like, or if you just don't have any extra time to like message people or anything like that, then just hire a property manager.
Yeah.
Cause that will save so much, especially if it's a good one, you know, and that's where it's like, you need to learn what questions to ask.
Yeah.
Because that's going to save so much time and stress off your back.
Yeah.
And just even as we went into, we started off buying short-term rentals and we got to a point where we're like, hey, let's do like self-management so we can get more money from this. And, and then we started like, hey, we can manage like other people's as well.
Yeah.
Well, that's when we started going into some growing pains and some like, oh, this is actually a lot harder. Like, I need to get my systems really dialed to be a good product. And so that is something we're still growing through and we're still learning a lot. And we are like just rolling with the punches on that, you know, because there's a lot that goes into effectively managing multiple properties.
Yeah.
Because you're worried about the messaging, you have to coordinate the cleaners, you have to coordinate the supplies, you have to coordinate like guest experience, the follow up, you know, maintaining a guest list that you could, you know, continually market to if you're a smart, you know, property manager.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. That's the first time I've heard of that. That's pretty cool. Managing a guest list.
Smart.
Yeah. Keeping all the people that have come and sending out, you know, you could probably
have to.
In January in Boise, like, why would you not be sending out a promotional thing knowing your Airbnbs are not booked to say, come stay, and in exchange, here's a freaking gift basket or a Starbucks. You just got me excited.
No, that's exactly it. Because, you know, you see a lot of guys guys I follow, they will, and you know, this is our first year doing it, so we haven't, like, bumped up for the next year yet, but they will do promotional runs and give like 15% off, you know, to guests. Hey, you know, they'll remarket to their same guests that they have, especially because they do it in vacation areas. So it's very common for them to revisit. And if they had a good stay, they'd be like, oh, great, 15% off. If I book now, might as well.
Yep.
And they already know the place. They're comfortable with it. It's not a guess of what they're going to get, right?
Yeah. So, and then what's cool about that is they book through their direct website, right? So you get to save on host fees on that, and you get to save on you know, booking fees, the guest pays or pays less and you get to keep more.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
That's rad. I love that this can become not dependent on Airbnb. Cause what I find is that, and we're guilty of this. I'll call Noah out cause it's a funny story. Somebody at the VP cod was like, hey bro, they're not just called Airbnbs. You got to call them short-term rentals. Cause they were, and I was like, oh, that's actually a great point. Cause I was guilty of it too. I was putting posts on Instagram by Airbnbs. I don't run Airbnbs. We run short-term rentals. Yep. The platform is Airbnb. But I find that so many people just want the easy route and they want to be dependent on Airbnb.
Yep.
Which if you're doing one, like you said, probably totally fine. But when you get to multiple, or when you're a manager and you're just relying solely on those platforms, that's when things get dangerous because those platforms are built to make money off of you and the guests, obviously. So if there's a way for you to help the guests get a cheaper stay and you make more money by circumventing Airbnb, like having your guest list or having your own website, like those are things that you can capture so much more revenue if you're paying attention and managing to. But I see that so many people just love the ease of it. They're like, oh, I just put it on Airbnb, which is great. But you're also, you gotta realize that you're risking loss of captured profit that you might not get.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So one of my mentors, he has like maybe 60 or so listings right now that he owns. And he, so what, he had all of his on one account at one time and he had forgot to respond to something and he like lost, like he closed out there. They closed out his account, which had like at the time, maybe like 40 or so listings. Jeez. And you know, that lost, you know, I'd say, man, cause he didn't even notice it was closed out for like about a week, but he lost listings on like maybe about, I want to say like almost 10 to 20,000 in revenue. So it was like, you know, it's scary when you get to rely on only on one source, you know, and we do three, but it just depends on what area. So like Airbnb, Vrbo, and booking.com. And it depends on the market, but we'll allow like one market to be open for like months in advance. And then like, say in this market, it's Vrbo and booking.com only for the 1 month. We'll allow it for availability just to fill in those little gaps. But like, I mean, you need to grab all those guests, all those emails, you know, off of those platforms, because that is a free marketing email list that, you know, you've now interacted with.
Before we run out of time, one of the things that I'd like to jump into is, what are some specific tangible things that you can change about a specific property? Say we're talking about a little 2-1 home in the North End in Boise, you know, and what are some specific things that I can do to that home to make that stand out on Airbnb? Like, where am I going to have my best ROI? Is it on rugs? Is it on making sure the property's updated? Is it bikes? I don't know.
You started with rugs?
I know. I'm just throwing out random things.
The secret to rugs.
Let me tell you. No. To be honest, so there's actually quite a few things. And, you know, as you guys know, you know, one of the main people who book are females. And so you have to kind of come from the perspective of a female of what they would like to see. And it's all going to be from the first three pictures. And so those are going to be the things you're going to be adding on, you know, that's going to allow that say that 2-1 in North End would be going to, you know, is it going to pop? And so we recommend light colors, modern kind of theme, light colors. And you could do different themes. It just depends what market you're in, right?
Yeah.
Because if you're in the suburbs, there's going to be a specific clientele you're serving.
Yeah.
If you're in Disneyland, then there's going to be a specific clientele, you know, you're going to serve around Disneyland.
Yeah, you got Mickey Mouse everywhere.
Exactly. You know, that's how I'm saying. Because people want to go to Disneyland. That's what they go there for. Yeah, so they want to see some theme rooms and experience. But anyway, I digress. But with the, like, for this example, some of the things, it's really cool, some more data that you can pull from. AirDNA has this little function where you can see what amenities get booked more often in what type of location. So whether it's, you know, vacation space, desert areas, or downtown, suburban, midtown, rural areas, they'll show you if people book more hot tubs or they pay more for hot tubs or if they book more for, you know, air conditioning or not, or if they allow pets or not. So those are some of those few things that you could see. And those are, I say those ones because those are some of the most common. But like around here, like, you know, sometimes there is a difference in showing that there's a hot tub available, especially in vacation areas.
Yeah.
But, or they allow pets, you know, or, you know, so those are some things I would just take a look at and say, what are people booking more higher for? And that's an article you can find on airdna.co. Okay. Yeah. But like, I highly recommend don't do dark colors, and paint. There's a significant difference.
Yeah.
And what people will pay just for a light, bright, like welcoming, warm space.
Yeah, you want it to be relaxing and peaceful. Exactly. I think the amenities filter that's crucial because not only do you then get to see the amenities that are important to attract guests and get higher bookings, but you can also compare in different areas, right? Because in the suburbs, the amenity that books out often might be an office space or it might be a trampoline or something. Like
fenced yard.
Yard. You're talking dogs, family, kids. But in downtown, none of that might matter. You might be looking at hot tub. You might be looking at bikes. So
parking,
like types of things that matter. And it's very specific to areas. I think that's key. I haven't thought about that or really had anybody point that out.
I've actually learned. This is why I was so excited for this episode. I knew I would learn things from you, even though we sit down with you on a weekly or sometimes twice a week basis. Yeah. But
we're recording this, right?
Yeah.
And that's gonna be cool with something you said too, is like with the parking, you know, people like for if you want longer stays.
You're pointing at Jeff, but I'm the one that said that just so
you want like that will allow for longer stays. Like people will stay longer just for if they have parking available, like U-Hauls or something like that, because there's moving going on or something.
Noah's sensitive about who you point at today, because we were at dinner with a buddy last night, and this guy walks up and he's like, "Hey, you buy houses, right?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "I saw your," and he points at me,
and I'm over there quietly saying, "I'm like, yeah, we both."
He's like,
"Yeah,
we buy
houses."
Noah's like, "We buy houses," and the guy's like, "I saw your TV commercial." Well, then about 30 minutes later, the waiter walks up to the table and he looks at Noah and he's like, "Hey, you're on TV, aren't you?" But it was totally because Noah went and snuck away to the bathroom and told the waiter to do it. It was hilarious, dude.
I was like, "Come on, man. We split the cost of that commercial and he get the recognition at dinner."
In front of one of our buddies, too. And the buddy was just cracking up, dude. It was hilarious. Well, hey, we got like 3 or 4 minutes left. Let's we ask kind of the same couple questions every time. Not gonna lie, we may be stealing from another podcast, but what books or podcasts do you recommend for people getting into just real estate specifically, or if you have like an Airbnb specific thing that you recommend people listen to?
Yeah, so Airbnb specific thing, I'm gonna say, man. So books, so I say one for each.
Yeah.
So book wise, it's not Airbnb specific, but man, this is what you turned me on to, but and also for his podcast, but Alex Hormozi. I never heard of the guy before. Noah introduced me to him a few months back, and he has this podcast called The Game, and he has this book called $100 Million Offer. And
you blew through that thing. I think you read that thing in a week, dude.
Is that the gym dude?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I didn't know he was the $100 million offer guy.
Yeah, dude, he is so legit. I've been eating up his stuff so much. It's just, and it's all about like sales and practical things and just life in general, but like heavy on the sales. And it's so applicable to any business whatsoever, because it's just It's human, because you're working with humans, right? Mm-hmm. And it's all applicable to working with humans and sales and just the psychology behind it. And he really hits that hard and even just helps you build a great product that is just, you cannot say no to. But when it comes to, say, podcasts, so one of my mentors who I learned from, and I wish I could give him more credit because I never, like, spoke to the dude. It's just, I just listen and devour his podcasts and devour his, really all of his stuff. But it's Tim Hubbard.
Okay.
Tim Hubbard owns the, it's called Rest Methods, and he doesn't really have a whole lot of recognition for the amount of value that he gives. You know, but I would say that's going to be the top ones I'd recommend. And of course I'd recommend my own as well, just cause I'm building it up. But, you know, I'm not sure, probably be something wrong with STR Legacies or Michael Porsche or what have you.
Yeah.
But,
you're going to do a podcast?
Yeah. And it's going to be like vacation rental, you know, probably focused, but I'm still developing on what it's going to look like and whatnot. But just because there's such good opportunity of being able to sit in front of somebody in front of you and just learn from them. You know what I mean?
It's so funny. As you were sitting here, like literally the last minute, I've been listening to your delicious voice that just carries through the microphone. And I'm like, dude, Mike needs to do a podcast on this because there's only one I mean, I haven't looked in a while, but I'd looked into Airbnbs back in like 2017. Mm-hmm. And there was only one girl doing it out of Colorado that was actually putting out useful content for short-term rentals.
Yeah.
But that was it. And I don't know that that's, I'm sure that that's changed by this point.
Yeah.
But I don't know that there's like a dominating thought leader as far as short-term rentals goes for a podcast platform.
Not a dominating, but because there's so many different ones right now, but they're like, there's definitely a few good, I mean, it's just, it's hard to find. Like there's some I'm just like, you hurt my ears. And there's like, other ones like Tim Hubbard, who I'm like, dude, Rest Methods is the way to go. It's a good spot.
That's killer.
Cool. All right. So we're going to wrap up the end of the show here. Mike, you're this was an amazing show. I feel like you gave so much value. I'm really excited about it. Last question we have. And then I know that you had talked about, you had some type of freebie you were going to give away to the listeners that helps them get started in short-term rentals?
Yeah, so we if you go to strlegacies.com, so strlegacies.com.
It's really easy enough.
I hope you can spell a little bit. But we give out a free short-term rental analyzer that is compared with a long-term rental analyzer.
Dude, sweet.
Awesome. But also in that you get there's a free webinar training. We host one on Thursdays, and it's all about, you know, finding those three items about where is the best market, what kind of data that you want to utilize, and, you know, and how do you do it with little or no money down?
Cool, man. Awesome. Okay. Well, there you guys go. If you want to grab those freebies from Mike, go to his website, strlegacies.com. The very, very last question, we're going to start being more consistent with this. Mike, what is your idea of chasing freedom?
Ooh. What is my idea of chasing freedom? Man. It's getting after it, boy. It's getting after what allows you the freedom and time to go after your why. Mm. Like you just identify what is your why. What gets you so stoked in the morning to get you like, oh, I'm going to get on this. Yeah. You know what I mean? For me, it happens to be my wife. I like to, you know, cuddle with her. But like it's whatever that why is, you know, that's going to fuel that more freedom and time, you know, for that. Then it's just that's what's getting after that, that allows that freedom and time to do what you love.
I love that, man.
Awesome,
man. I love that. Cool, guys. You can reach Mike on Instagram. We'll put his personal phone number in there as well for you guys to call him up at any time. He's up at 3 a.m., so just ring him whenever.
I got some of his old firefighter calendars. They'll be on Instagram. Okay, perfect. So. Hey, really appreciate you coming on today, brother.
Thanks, brother.
Thanks for having me.
All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
Please subscribe to our YouTube channel in the show notes below. And if you ever want to get a hold of us, feel free to do it via our Instagrams. You can also follow us for our funny content on TikTok.